Hello and welcome to the Arizona Capital Times on Sun Sounds. My name is John Coe. I am in Flagstaff and I will be your volunteer reader for today, reading articles that were published in the Arizona Capital Times on or about May 23rd, 2025. Headline: Senator Bollock and Representative Blackmun work together to get animal cruelty bill advanced in the House. Written by Jamar Younger and published in the Arizona Capital Times on May 20th, 2025. An animal cruelty bill that supporters say would clearly define suitable conditions for pets is one step closer to receiving final legislative approval. Senate Bill 1658 passed the House Committee of the Whole on May 20th after it was added to the calendar before the House convened for a floor session. The measure would clarify what constitutes inhumane conditions for domestic animals, redefine what it means to provide the appropriate food, water, and shelter, and add a misdemeanor charge for failing to provide an animal with medical attention to prevent unnecessary suffering. The bill was prompted by an animal cruelty case in September 2023 when 55 disabled dogs were seized from a Chandler home. The owner was arrested on multiple charges of animal cruelty, fraud, and theft. The House will still need to give final approval for the measure during its next third read hearing, which will likely be delayed for a couple of weeks since the chamber has recessed until June 4th. The bill will then need to head back to the Senate for final approval before it's sent to the governor. The Committee of the Whole hearing was the latest in an arduous journey for the bill, which has faced obstacles in the House and Senate and has to be revived as a Stryker amendment after the original bill stalled in the House. The bill's sponsor, Senator Shauna Bollock, a Republican from Phoenix, spent the last several weeks advocating for the legislation after House leadership told her that the bill lacked support. Bollock joined Arizona Humane Society President and CEO Stephen Hansen and dozens of supporters for a rally and a press conference the morning before the start of the House floor session. Representative Walt Blackmun, a Republican from Snowflake, and Senator Lauren Kuby, a Democrat from Tempe, also appeared at the rally to show their support for the bill. Quote, "I decided to introduce Senate Bill 1658 when I learned of significant shortcomings in the state that make it difficult to prosecute people who commit cruelty against animal companions," Bollock said at the press conference. The bill was initially introduced as Senate Bill 1234, but was double assigned to the House Natural Resources, Energy and Water Committee and the House Judiciary Committee after it was approved in the Senate with bipartisan support. Blackmun used a Stryker amendment on another Bollock bill after the original animal cruelty measure was double assigned. The bill maintained a bipartisan support during the Committee of the Whole hearing on Tuesday, although some Republican lawmakers questioned whether the penalties were too harsh and the bill too vague. Quote, "This bill is cruel to a very different type of animal, and that would be human beings," said Representative Alexander Colladin, a Republican from Scottsdale. Quote, "I always hate to see bills pushed through this chamber that put in the legislative text a primacy on the well-being of animals over people, and this bill does exactly that." Representative Rachel Keschel, a Republican from Tucson, said the bill's language could lead to unintended consequences for animal owners. Quote, "The language is just far too vague at certain points where it could potentially criminalize someone who possibly can't afford to take care of their animal properly according to this bill, and this will be someone that actually loves their animal very much," Keschel said. Blackmun said lawmakers didn't have to vote for the bill if they didn't support it, but he issued a strong rebuke to some legislators that he believed were obstructing the bill and keeping it from being heard in the chamber. Quote, "We don't have the opportunity or the luxury to just pick and choose what's going to get us elected or not," Blackmun said. "We do the job that the people want us to do, and this is the job that the people want us to do. They want to make sure that dogs are not mistreated, that they are being fed properly, given water. What's wrong with that? Why is that such a big political deal?" Headline: Lawmakers seek AG probe of Phoenix donations to various organizations. Written by Jacob Thorington and published in the Arizona Capital Times on May 23rd, 2025. Three Republican state representatives are calling on the Attorney General's office to investigate the city of Phoenix after alleging that city officials broke the state's gift clause by giving millions of dollars to non-governmental organizations. Representatives David Marshall, a Republican from Snowflake, Walt Blackman, a Republican from Snowflake, and Quang Nguyen, a Republican from Prescott Valley, filed Senate Bill 1487, a complaint against the city over its gift policy, which by statute requires Democratic Attorney General Chris Mays to investigate and issue a report within 30 days. The representatives allege 41 city employees violated the state's gift clause and other laws by making more than 600 donations of up to $32,000 to non-governmental organizations without the city council's approval. On May 21st, Goldwater Institute also jumped in with a letter to Mays threatening litigation if her office finds that the city didn't violate the law, representing Phoenix taxpayer Bramley Paulin. Goldwater Institute is asking Mays to take action to stop the city's non-governmental organization expenditure policy and to recover the allegedly illegally paid public monies. Quote, if the Attorney General declines to enforce the law, the Institute may pursue other legal protections in court. Goldwater will continue to defend taxpayers from public officials bent on dishing out public funds to special interest groups. Goldwater Institute staff attorney Parker Jackson wrote in a May 21st news release, Marshall began looking into the city's gift policy in February after learning that three separate city departments donated at least $10,000 to the Arizona Science Center's Galaxy Gala on February 1st, according to a February 25th letter that he sent to the Phoenix City Council. Quote, I do not dispute that it is a worthy cause to support the Science Center's STEM educational programs, but I do question whether it is appropriate for any government body to donate such large sums of taxpayer money to nonprofit organizations outside of a legislatively authorized grant program, Marshall wrote. Phoenix City Attorney Julie Cree informed Marshall on March 14th that Phoenix City policy does not require the City Council to approve donations from department directors under $32,000. Using city financial data, the representatives compiled a list of at least 634 expenditures department directors have made to individuals and organizations under $32,000 since April 15th, 2020. The total amount donated exceeds more than $28 million when combined. State representatives say the list may still be incomplete, and they have accused the city of inaccurately reporting department expenditures. In its defense, the city cited an ordinance which allows the city manager authority to distribute department work and administrative divisions, appropriate and expend public money to settle claims against the city less than $32,000, and attend city council meetings, but the three representatives argue no city policy gives department directors the authority to expend those contributions. Quote, for months, Phoenix officials have stonewalled legislative oversight and refused to provide any lawful justification for allowing unelected bureaucrats to hand out taxpayer dollars as they see fit, Marshall said in a House GOP news release. Quote, dozens of city officials and staff have been operating under the radar with no accountability, and it's time for the Attorney General to step in. Most contributions were categorized as either sponsorships, grants, or subsidies, advertising, or miscellaneous, and the recipients ranged from the state universities, nonprofit organizations, the Arizona Commerce Authority, a government relations firm, and media companies. One contribution specifically highlighted in SB 1487's complaint was a sponsorship contribution of $10,000 on August 20, 2024 to Alliance for Regenerative Medicine, an international advocacy organization based in Washington, D.C. The representative said some contributions appeared to be unrelated to Phoenix. Alliance for Regenerative Medicine has an upcoming conference about cell and gene therapy scheduled to be held in Phoenix on October 6th, with more than 2,000 individuals already registered to attend. The legislators also noted a $5,000 sponsorship on September 14, 2022, to the Chicago-based Alzheimer's Disease and Related Disorders Incorporated, but that organization has an office located in Phoenix. The final group of contributions flagged by complaints was 31 contributions totaling more than $111,000 to the National Forum for Black Public Administrators, which has a chapter based in Phoenix. Quote, "It appears to be nothing more than an illegal slush fund for politically favored nonprofits, and that's exactly what Arizona's gift clause was written to prevent," Blackman said in a news release. Cree wrote in an email to Marshall that organizations are selected by department directors based on the alignment of the organization's goals with those of the city department's goals and initiatives, which often reflect council priorities. Quote, "The factors considered in making these decisions include alignment with the department's goals, council priorities, and the potential educational or community benefits of the event or the organization," Cree wrote. The city of Phoenix declined to comment due to the ongoing investigation. You're listening to the Arizona Capital Times on Sunsounds of Arizona. Sunsounds of Arizona has been providing information access since 1979, and you can always listen to our live stream at sunsounds.org. Headline: Attorney General Mays files motion to pursue second execution. Written by Kira Riley and published in the Arizona Capital Times on May 23, 2025. Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays filed a motion to pursue the second execution of her tenure, selecting Richard Jerf, a man convicted for the 1993 murder of four members of the Luna family, Albert, 47, Patricia, 42, Rochelle, 18, and Damien, 5. Mays filed a motion to set a briefing schedule for the warrant of execution on May 22nd. In doing so, she affirmed her commitment to upholding capital punishment in the state. Quote, "I will continue to enforce the death penalty because it is the law in Arizona, and victims deserve justice. The heinous murders by Richard Jerf of the Luna family, including their 5-year-old son, shock the conscience, and their loved ones have waited 32 years to see justice served," Mays said in a statement. "My office is committed to upholding the rule of law and standing with victims who have endured unimaginable loss." Jerf was mentioned as a likely candidate for the next death warrant by Maricopa County Attorney Rachel Mitchell at a press conference on April 23rd. In announcing her pick, Mitchell detailed Jerf's crime. Quote, "I remain committed to doing what's necessary to make sure that victims' families get the closure that they deserve," Mitchell said. According to court documents, Jerf committed the quadruple homicide as an act of revenge after Albert Luna Jr., Jerf's co-worker at Safeway, broke into his apartment and stole electronics and a firearm in January 1993. Jerf was sentenced to death in 1996 after pleading guilty to 4 counts of first-degree murder. As a part of a deal with the state, he exhausted his appeals in 2019. The motion to set a briefing schedule leaves filings for the Arizona Supreme Court to conference and ultimately rule on the warrant of execution. The process also kickstarts the task of preparing and testing drugs that will be used in the upcoming execution at the Arizona Department of Corrections, Rehabilitation, and Reentry. The state anticipates filing its motion for a warrant of execution on July 3rd, with a response from Jerf due on July 17th, a reply on July 24th, and a conference at the Arizona Supreme Court on July 29th. Jerf will likely be executed between August and September. Jerf marks the second death sentence carried out since the state put a pause on capital punishment in 2023 for both an internal and external, though cut short, review of lethal injection procedures. Headline: What's in a name? A lot when it comes to late Congressman Grijalva. Written by Reagan Priest and published in the Arizona Capital Times on May 24th. 2025. Voters in Tucson, Yuma, Nogales, and other parts of southern Arizona haven't seen a competitive congressional race in decades. That's because Democratic United States Representative Raul Grijalva has been reelected to represent the area 11 times since 2003 and hadn't seen a primary challenger since 2012. But Grijalva's death in March triggered a special election, one that now has five Democrats running in the primary. Three candidates have emerged as top contenders, giving voters a choice that they haven't had to make in 20 years. Three Republican candidates are also running, but none are likely to win, given the Democrats' considerable voter registration advantage in the 7th Congressional District. Adelita Grijalva, the late congressman's daughter and longtime local official, is viewed by many as the obvious successor. But Daniel Hernandez, a former state lawmaker, and Deja Fox, a political influencer and activist, have also stepped up to give Adelita a run for her money. Each candidate has similar stances on issues like Medicaid and Social Security, and has emphasized resistance against President Donald Trump as a focal point of their campaign. What really sets them apart are their stories and their answers to Democrats' large setbacks in 2024. With mail-in ballots going out on June 18th and the primary on July 15th, candidates have a limited window in which to energize voters. Whoever succeeds is all but guaranteed to sail to victory in the general election in September. Subheadline, The Favorite. The energy was high at a canvas launch in Tucson on May 17th. Music blasted from a speaker, and an electric blue vintage Impala was parked behind what used to be Raul Grijalva's campaign office. Volunteers mingled with state lawmakers, mayors, and other local leaders representing the area, while Adelita Grijalva posed for photos in the car. She rallied the troops with a speech before sending canvassers off to court registered Democrats for the upcoming special election. Quote, "I feel my dad with me every day," Adelita told the crowd, choking up a little. "So whenever I feel like I'm not really sure I can do this, I'm like, where did that little energy come from? Thanks, Dad." Jackie Ortiz, a volunteer for the campaign, said the late congressman was also the first thought for voters when teams first began knocking on doors. Quote, "Grijalva is a huge name in Tucson, so when people were walking to doors and saying, 'Hey, Adelita Grijalva is running,' the first reaction was always, 'I love Raul. This is great for Raul,'" Ortiz said. The team's mission is now to remind voters that Adelita is also her own person, with her own experience and policy goals, which she plans to bring to Congress. She served on the Pima County Board of Supervisors before resigning to run for her father's seat, and was a school board member for 20 years. Quote, "What we did as canvassers is we said, we're going to maintain and continue the progressive values that Raul brought to Congress, but we're also bringing Adelita and her experience as a school board member and supervisor, as a woman and as a mother," Ortiz said, "and that really caught on. So now when we go canvass, it's all about Adelita." The Grijalva name comes up more than just familiarly and as a legacy. It also comes up with endorsements from top Arizona political leaders like United States Senator Mark Kelly and former United States Representative Gabby Giffords. Hundreds of donations, the late congressman's campaign email list, and the full weight of the Democratic political establishment. Those who came out to participate in the canvass cite Adelita's progressive record, her decades of experience in local government, and her connection to the community as their motivations for supporting her candidacy. Many voters even said they like the other candidates in the race, but still feel that Adelita is the best person for the job. For her part, Adelita said she wants Southern Arizonans to know that they will still have a fighter representing them in Congress if she is elected. Quote, "After 20 years on a school board and 4 years on the Board of Supervisors, I have some pretty thick skin," she told volunteers on May 17th. "I really do, so I promise you we are going to continue to fight." Subheadline, The Underdog. Daniel Hernandez said he knows he is the underdog in this race, but it is a familiar role for him. Quote, "I'm a gay Latino who got elected at 26 to the legislature," Hernandez said. "Nothing's ever been easy. I've always had to work really hard to earn everything that I've received. I've never been the establishment pick. Hernandez is best known for helping save Gabby Gifford's life in 2011 after she was shot outside of a supermarket in Tucson when he was her congressional intern. But he parlayed that media attention into a political career, starting on a school board much like Adelita. Hernandez made waves in 2016 when he beat a Republican incumbent for a seat in the State House of Representatives. During this time in the legislature, he worked across the aisle to advance Democratic policy issues that were usually dead on arrival in the Republican-controlled body. His campaign sees a path to victory similar to United States Representative Yasemin Ansari's win in 2024's primary. Ansari is a slightly more moderate millennial who is newer to the Arizona political scene and faced off against Raquel Terran, a progressive Gen Xer who ran the state Democratic Party and has enjoyed a long career in politics. Despite being far fewer major endorsements and almost no support from Arizona Democrats, Ansari beat Terran in the primary for the Phoenix area seat, surprising the political establishment. Hernandez also has a moderate bent and is young, only 35, making him a spring chicken by congressional age standards. He and Ansari also share one critical and somewhat controversial viewpoint, their support for Israel. While the Israel-Palestine conflict did not seem to be a driving factor in the 2024 elections, it is a concern for primary voters in deep blue Tucson, where many houses display Palestinian flags. Hernandez's sisters are Jewish, and the three are vocal supporters of Israel. But he says focusing on broad social and foreign policy issues is what got Democrats into this mess in 2024, which is why he is staying on message. Quote, "We need to stop telling people what to care about and actually listen when the economy and Social Security are the biggest concerns for many folks," Hernandez said. "We need to talk about solutions and what we're going to offer for those people, as opposed to talking about things that don't impact people day to day." That message, combined with his legislative record and campaign's ground game, make Hernandez confident that victory is possible. Subheadline: The Dark Horse. If Hernandez isn't the establishment pick, Deja Fox is the thorn in the establishment's side. The 25-year-old activist turned Kamala Harris staffer turned political influencer is hoping to become the first Gen Z woman in Congress and isn't playing by typical campaign rules. Fox has almost no endorsements, but has a social media presence and reach that her opponents could only dream of. Her TikTok videos about her campaign regularly get hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of views. Fox uses social media and the blogging platform Substack to court potential voters and solicit donations. While she was canvassing on May 16th in Tucson, one voter opened the door and said she heard about Fox on Instagram. However, another voter told Fox that she has a bright future ahead of her, but she wouldn't be voting for her in this election. Fox said it's a reaction she rarely receives from voters, but one she does get from politicos and party leaders. Quote, "It's a real representation problem that one in five Americans are Gen Z, and yet we have one representative in Congress," Fox said. She also pushes back on those who argue that she doesn't have enough experience, whether in life or in politics, to be in Congress. Fox sees her lack of time in public office as an asset, not a hurdle. Quote, "Anybody who says I'm inexperienced isn't paying attention," Fox said. "I've been doing this for 10 years. It's a different kind of experience. I know power from the other side of the dais." Fox got her start in politics at age 15 when a video of her going toe-to-toe with then-United States Senator Jeff Flake over Planned Parenthood funding went viral. Since then, Fox graduated from Columbia University, worked on Kamala Harris's 2020 presidential campaign, and built a platform as a political influencer. Fox said she knows her campaign is ruffling feathers, but she isn't asking for permission or waiting her turn. She hopes to hold the Democratic Party accountable for its missteps and bring a young voice to Congress. Quote, "When newer and younger comes around with 10 years of experience running for an open seat of a safe blue district, electeds put their thumb on the scale and make it even harder for somebody like me when we deserve a fair, free, and exciting primary," Fox said, referring to Adelita's endorsements from Democrats like United States Senator Ruben Gallego and Attorney General Chris Mays. She also sees a clear path to victory through two upcoming debates, one hosted by Arizona PBS and another by the Clean Elections Commission. Fox said her uphill battle isn't convincing voters to choose her over her opponents. It's making sure voters know her name before they see it on the ballot. Quote, when we tell people that I'm young, that they have an opportunity to make history, that they have an option with a newer voice, they get excited about this election. Headline, new law curbs how marijuana businesses can promote their product. Written by Howard Fisher and published in the Arizona Capital Times on May 27, 2025. First they came for Joe Camel. Now Arizona lawmakers are targeting Santa Claus. No, they're not trying to erase him. They don't want his image to be used to pitch the sale of marijuana any more than R.J. Reynolds' mascot was used to promote smoking. A new law, approved by a wide margin and signed by Governor Katie Hobbs, will curb how those state-regulated marijuana establishments can promote their products. The key, according to Representative Selena Bliss, is to stop promoting the drug, which is legal for adults, to anyone younger than 21. That, said the Prescott Republican, means ensuring that none of the advertising is targeted at those in that age group. That means no images or likenesses of toys, cartoons, or animated or fictional characters, including Santa Claus, in marijuana advertising. Also off-limits are names on products that resemble or imitate food or drink brands marketed to children. It also bans any sort of advertising in that medium which targets younger viewers. However, even when the advertiser claims to be targeting adults, there are still additional restrictions. Advertising will also be banned at public airports, public buses, and trains, including the shelters set up at bus stops. Even general advertising on websites will have special restrictions. It can exist, but only if 73.6% of the audience is expected to be at least 21 years old. And that figure is not random. Bliss said it is based on census population data of the United States population that is at least 21 years old. More to the point, Bliss said that's the standard set by the Distilled Spirits Council of the United States for determining whether or not advertising is targeted at adults or children. That same figure appears elsewhere in the new law. It bars marijuana retailers from sponsoring any sporting events at which at least 73.6% of the audience is expected to be at least 21 years old. You've been listening to the Arizona Capital Times, a production of Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thank you for listening.